This is the Wait Just an InfoSec podcast, your weekly opportunity to tap into the minds of some of the world's foremost cybersecurity experts. Wait Just an InfoSec is a weekly show live streamed on SANS Institute social media channels on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. The show features a wide range of guests from across the InfoSec community. Whether we're diving into the weeds of the latest data breach or exploring the security implications of groundbreaking technology such as generative AI, each episode brings you new insight to keep you engaged in the industry, feed your fire for knowledge, and amplify your value as an InfoSec practitioner. Join the SANS community and gain free access to cutting-edge industry news, cybersecurity resources like technical research, and tools that can't be found elsewhere. Subscribe for free today at sans.org/join.
So I want to start off real quick here with doing a fast, 30-second lightning round of intros here. If you just tuned in and you missed my intro, I'm John Hubbard. I'm one of the instructors here at SANS and working the cyber defense curriculum, author of a couple classes, Sec 450 and Leadership 551, which are SOC-related courses. Ismail, what about you?
Well, I'm the SANS author, senior instructor, and author of Security 530 and co-author of a new class, Security 568.
Thank you. Mark?
Hey, I'm Mark Baggett, senior instructor. I'm the author of SANS SEC 573, Automating Information Security with Python, and 673, the advanced version of that. And then the co-author of SANS SEC 406, which is a brand new class that introduces how to secure a Linux machine, assuming that you're coming from a Windows background and you want to incorporate some of those Linux skills. And we've got a run coming up in Orlando, Florida. And so we'll see you in Orlando this year.
Yeah, definitely a really interesting kind of new class in the curriculum. So if you haven't checked that out, everyone, check out Sec 406, one of our new things, and 568 as well with Ismail. Gene, what about yourself?
So also a SANS instructor and course author, I am responsible for Sec 555, SIM with Tactical Analytics.
Fantastic. So we have a amazing panel of experts here. We got authors and instructors working with SANS for a long time. So to kick this off, right, we're doing predictions, which can always be a risky thing to do, but it's a fun thing to do as well, right? No one's holding us to this and going to yell at us at the end of the year, hopefully, right, if we get these wrong. But one of the ways I think we can frame out this conversation is just thinking about kind of where we've been in terms of the threat environment and some of the things that have happened most recently. Ismail, I know you're kind of living in that world right now. Any kind of things you could kick us off with on that?
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, I spent a lot of time going through statistics and doing looking at data to be able to also build some forecasts, right? I really don't like the word prediction. Sorry, John. But to me, I think we all laugh when we talk about predictions every year, right? Because it feels like you're pulling up the crystal ball and trying to, see what could... No, I like to work with data like many of us here. So I think the word forecast is more about that, right? Like, let's look at what happened over the last few years to see what could come next, like just like the weather forecast. So talking about what happened in 2023, what we have seen, especially over the last few months, is a lot of more attacks, more malware, more samples, more of everything, more threat actors. APTs, for example, they have continued obviously to be very active. We know there are a lot of geopolitical conflicts around the world that motivate these threat actors to do espionage campaigns related to military objectives, political objectives. But what we have seen as well is that in many cases, they have been masquerading behind criminal groups that are financially motivated, making these attribution that it's always been hard, but it's even harder right now. We also see that the barrier of entry has lowered in terms of a lot more malware available out there, builders for ransomware, many of these red teaming tools that are, can be used legitimately have been leaked. So the source code is out there and a lot of groups are just making use of this. And we have seen in terms of tactics, well, just like usual, right? A lot of exploitation of CVEs. In many cases, I mean, we know this is boring, right? Patching, probably this is... not one of the predictions. We're going to do more patching, but that's something that we all have to do, right? There's a lot of this CVE exploitation. But looking at the data, we have seen that the top tactic used by attackers once they are in the network is, no surprise, defense evasion and credential stealing. Therefore, we have seen a lot of Redline, Vidar, a lot of these credential stealers that initial access brokers use to go and sell in the black market. So we have seen also a lot of better phishing thanks to, yes, AI, right? LLM tools. We're going to talk about this later or at some point during this panel. And more attacks against our platforms. We have seen attackers shifting towards things like programming languages like Rust, like Golang. I did a talk at RSA earlier last year, talking about Mac malware and how we were very close to see ransomware for Mac. And we see attackers just being lazy, what I usually say, right? Attackers are lazy. If you can just code things once and make it work across different platforms, Windows, Mac OS, and Linux, attackers will do that. And finally, a lot more attacks against critical infrastructure. And I, you know, include hospitals in that, educational systems, not just like, you know, energy, plans or things like this. We have seen a lot of ransomware, right? Black Cat, Alpha V, Cure ransomware being very, very busy with this type of critical infrastructure.
Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting things in there. And I think some of the stuff that came up in the poll previously are what we would traditionally think are some of the answers for some of those things, right? Defense evasion, credential stealing, right? And we see that people are buying SOAR platforms and XDR, right, as a tool to help highlight these kinds of things. This is a question maybe to any of you. Any kind of thoughts on why we're continuing to miss this, or where we can go in the future to help make it more difficult and increasingly difficult than it's been in the past to have those things work?
It's going to be different for every organization, but I think one of the things that we're going to see this year coming up is no more excuses for the blocking and tackling. With as much scrutiny as is going to be coming along on CISOs this year, they're all going to say, look, my job's on the line. My reputation is going to be on the line even more. And I think a lot of CISOs at many organizations are going to turn around and they're going to kind of be from Missouri, you know, the show me state. Show me that we have this blocking and tackling in place. And we'll see some more heated conversations around the organization saying, well, you know, we trust our people, or let's do it this way, or maybe we don't need to be so strict. And I think we're going to see more and more security teams coming up and saying, hey, enough is enough. What are you guys?
So I'm curious what Mark has to say about this, because obviously Python and automation and you know, being a little bit on both the red and the blue side and his abilities there. Any take on where this might go?
Yeah, I mean, there's always been this fine line between functionality that we have to deliver as a business. Whatever it is that you've got to do, no organizations exist for the purpose of building secure networks, right? So there's this fine line. And then the question becomes, you know, how closely do you manage that line? And there's the organizations who aren't doing it very well, where if you've got this balance between what we have to do as a business and what we'd really like to lock down, there's a small margin there. And then you got the businesses who just have a really big margin. And along the lines of what Gene was saying, I think that we'll use technologies like SOAR and automation and things like that and holding CISOs responsible to force organizations who have this wide margin to narrow that margin down. But what are we going to do to make it go away? It's never going to really go away, because whenever you get that down to a really small window and you've got a finely managed balance between security, there's still, you know, we have to have our employees have access, and they are going to give their passwords away for a bar of chocolate, right? Or they are going to open up the files that they download on the internet. And so there's always going to be this struggle.
But it's going to be good chocolate, right? It's not Hershey. I mean, it's going to be good chocolate, right?
Yeah, that's why, you know, Europeans are more vulnerable to the chocolate attacks than we are here.
I agree with you. You know, John, I would like to answer this, or try to answer this question from Del Ameco, like CISO. Will we see increased budgets? And tie that to your question. Because I don't think we're going to see increased budgets in security. Like, if you look at the macro economy, where we are right now and the tendency over the last few months and where we're going towards, at least for half of the year, I'm not a financial expert by any means, but it's obvious, right? Because we have seen cycles like this before. I don't think we're going to see increased budgets. What I have seen is that the security budget may be taking a little bit more off the overall IT budget. But I think that this is going to probably, it's not a bad thing. It's just going to force us to do better with the things that we already have. You know, this is one of the things I always say in Security 530, the defensible security architecture, you know, using zero trust mindset. It is, you know, we live in an industry that we need to buy products. We need commercial solutions, right? That's understood. But we need to define what's the problem we're trying to solve first. And I think that, back to your question, John, the reason why we see that a lot of these issues that are not maybe that hard to solve, some of them, they are hard to solve, and we're never going to solve them, right? As Mark said. But some of these other issues, we don't solve them because we try to fix them with just products. And we just buy them because that's, you know, we have budget for it, and that's what everybody's doing. And also because of, you know, vendors marketing as part of that. But I think that these more limited budgets are going to force us to look at something that we have said for a long time, right? Think red, act blue, threat modeling. Okay, this is what we really need to prioritize, what we need to focus on, and then start looking at what we have. Can we use it differently? Can we use it to take, you know, adversaries by surprise by doing something that is not necessarily what everybody else is doing? I would love to see more of that in 2024.
I would as well. And one of the things I've been watching along the lines here is, you know, with the budget question kind of to go along those lines, you know, there's that SEC rule in the US where we're running into an environment where legally you have to report breaches very, very quickly, right? There's no more like, let's sweep this under the rug and hope no one ever really finds about it, you know. That kind of thing, although, right, may or may not drive budgets, it certainly amplifies the cost and the regulatory kind of I don't know, penalty maybe that goes with some of these things, or at least the embarrassment factor, right? If nothing else. So there's a chance that maybe some of those things would add additional pressure, but yeah, you know, you never know where it's going to go, right? And, you know, we just posted the link to the four-part Zero Trust blog series. If you're not as familiar with some of the principles of Zero Trust, one of the predictions I want to make is people are going to go further towards a real practical Zero Trust kind of implementation on a lot of the maybe areas of their network or certain devices, the setup. I know myself recently, I've been evaluating over kind of the break time, my home lab. And I've been saying, you know what, I kind of want to rebuild my home lab, but using zero trust principles. And I think I'm actually going to do a YouTube series on that coming up. But I was looking out there and I found a couple different solutions that are like free. And I'm like, well, if I got some stuff in the cloud, I got some stuff in my basement, I got, you know, my own Microsoft login, like I got an identity provider, I got a way to do tunneling between all devices I want to connect to. And like, I can do it for free as a consumer. And like, this seems like a very mature, easy to set up product. So if that's available to me for free, I can only imagine those kinds of products are going to continue to kind of permeate the market and become a bigger thing as people realize their benefits. And just playing around with it at home, I know I've seen like, oh, this is really cool and way better than some of the stuff we've had in the past in terms of security options. So zero trust is a big one that I think is coming up there. Any other kind of like topics, predictions, or like areas of security you all want to bring up as a what's coming next?
I think as our economy continues to struggle, right, the first things that go are always the training budget. Sorry, guys. And the security budgets, right? Those tighten up first. And so I think all of those things you're saying are really going to drive people to embrace open source solutions, right? As a CISO, you know, having the opportunity to try those products out and see whether or not they actually do what it is that's written on the box and what the sales guy told you on the phone is a great opportunity to prove those technologies out. And then, and if not, nothing else, right? If that open source solution isn't the solution that you're going to implement, it gives you the chance to build that punch list of this is what I know is important to me and the things that I expect in the products that I'm going to, move forward with.
Yeah. One of the other big kind of things that I definitely wanted to touch on here is the threat of supply chain compromise. And I know, Ismail, this is probably your specialty in this panel here. What do you think we're going to see over the next couple of years? And what are some of the things that companies can think about to get ahead of those potential risks?
I like to talk about that in the context of, again, like zero trust, right? Which obviously has become a big buzzword. And that's one of the reasons why we started that series of blogs that has been, the link has been shared right in the chat. when we think about what we have seen over 2023, we have seen obviously the, and even before, right, the solar winds and all of these, which sometimes we think as of like highly targeted attacks. But the reality is that we see a lot more of these in another form of, I'm going to call it supply chain attack, which is like rebundling things that are available out there, utilities, binaries, and then combining these with phishing attacks, with watering hole attacks, asking or redirecting people to download this infected software that could be just a little utility that we use for remote access or we use for, you know, some other sort of regular business. So I see more and more organizations asking this question, do I trust what I put in my network? Whether it's an IoT device, something as a medical device, as a any type of new hardware that we buy from a vendor that might be in a country that we may not, you know, trust a lot, or it could be just a regular piece of software like Dropbox or, you know, Zoom or anything that we put on our computers. Like, do we really trust what's in there? Do we know the components? Do we know the libraries? And of course, this is hard to do at every single company out there. Smaller companies are probably not going to have the ability to do this by themselves. But larger companies that have their own, you know, risk management teams, government agencies, for sure, they already have teams doing this. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why last year we came together and we put together this class on combating supply chain attacks with product security testing. So it's very specific, very narrow, but it goes really deep into knowing what you put on your network. So you can make decisions, right, based on that.
I just saw in the chat, again, to go kind of with some of those complexities, another thing I wanted to bring up, passkeys and logging in, right? We have a whole bunch of kind of risks of passwords. We've seen it over and over. Just a couple of days ago, there was a BGP disruption in Orange, Spain, because someone had protected one of the accounts with the password ripe admin, right? So clearly, yeah. So clearly, passwords are still, in this year of 2024, a major, major issue. Passkeys. Everyone on this webcast right now, if you don't know about passkeys, this is like the one thing you need to go look up. If you have a Google account, g.co/passkeys, right? Microsoft has them, GitHub has them. There's a whole bunch of different things, right? Go totally, completely passwordless, and it's safer and more convenient and faster. I'm hoping that we're going to start seeing some of this stuff roll out over the next few years as company methods for authentication, for support within our devices and other things like that, single sign-on methods and everything kind of start to support passkeys. We need to get rid of the password. So that's going to be one of my bold predictions for next year, is we are going to start to actually see some more uptake of the death of the password. We saw it in 2023, like really kick up when Google started bringing it in, and a bunch of other kind of companies picked it up from there. And I hope we can fast forward that as much as possible. Our devices support it, right? Let's get rid of passwords and stop the BGP attacks from the poor passwords. What else can we bring up here? Anyone have any other kind of thoughts on that or anything else?
Well, first, I'll say that when we go to passkeys, that'll require two chocolate bars in order to get people to turn those over.
All right. I was going to say, since you mentioned this, I was not going to bring that up, but since you mentioned it, like BGP, there is PKI, right? RPKI, which can actually help to authenticate this BGP routing. So something that I see more organizations leveraging now, resource public key infrastructure, right? A way to sign, you know, these records that are associated to these BGP announcements to try to prevent that from happening. And I think last time I checked, it was about a 40% adoption. So hopefully during 2024, we can also adopt this.
Any thoughts on maybe some more spicy predictions, things that are a little bit out further in left field, right? We've covered AI. We know that's going to get better. We've covered, you know, some cloud and zero trust and all of that. Anyone have any kind of wild ideas that they'd like to throw out there?
Well, let's say, all right, of course, the government's going to govern, right? We're going to see new laws passed with AI. I don't think that's a pretty big risk there. We're going to see AI laws passed on there. I think we'll continue to see shortages in our industry for, you know, the number of people are coming in here. We're still going to fall short in the number of people that we have to fill our positions. And I think that that's a pretty safe bet too, in which case I think automation is a good solution for those things when we can make the people that know how to do this automate those skills to make the people who are brand new to this more effective, that's a win. As far as my far out prediction, I believe, I don't know that I believe it yet, but I'll predict that in 2024, Microsoft will announce that they will integrate Python into the operating system. And I think that because I think that they're gonna figure out that this whole pushing Excel processing off to a cloud instance and then bringing it back is going to cost them some money. I think that they'll say it's going to be cheaper to put it in there. I think they've got Guido on the team there. You know, if you look at their API release schedule, they often release the Python APIs. So there's my Python prediction for 2024. I think they will make an announcement in 2024 that they're going to be integrating Python into the operating system.
A quick follow-on to that, because that's an interesting one. If they did that, what kind of impact do you think that would have? And would it be more good or more bad in terms of cyber defense?
Yeah, I mean, so we have already seen cases of Python malware, right? So we've seen, because administrators already have the Linux subsystem running and have Ubuntu installed, you can run Python programs on most people's machines today who are in the technology industry because they have that underlying Ubuntu system there. So we've already seen some instances of that. So certainly that will happen if Python is added to it. But it's going to be the same attack vectors that we see in PowerShell, right? Yeah, it's just with, giving the attackers, but also all of us, more options when it comes to running things on our endpoints for automation.
Yeah. Interesting.
We'll see. You know, it'll come out as a administration, you know, capability for everybody that's running Windows, and then we're going to see how it's being taken advantage of by the adversary, and we'll respond.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting kind of playing field with more, you know, scripting embedded really in anything, right? Anytime you introduce the ability to run scripts, it's like, oh boy, like this is awesome, but also it's the double-edged sword, right? Gene, Ismail, do you have any kind of wild predictions? I have one myself, but I wanted to see what you guys had, if anything.
Wild predictions. Let me see. Let me bring the crystal ball. Attackers are going to use more of a ChatGPT to do more phishing attacks, right? Yeah, that's an easy one. It's funny, like we have seen, for example, a lot of more increasing attacks, phishing attacks against Japan. And when looking at, you know, why, you know, over the last few months, more attacks against Japan, well, it was hard to do, like, well, you know, for attackers, it was hard to craft good Japanese phishing emails, but now everybody speaks great Japanese or any other language for that sake. So, you know, this will increase the number of attacks against, you know, some other countries with minorities where, you know, some of these languages are spoken that maybe attackers didn't focus very much on before.
Interesting. Yeah. Didn't really think about that. The accessibility of more, I mean, I thought about it for English, right? I've been reading those headlines for a long time. It's like now everyone can craft perfect English in their phishing emails with no problem. But yeah, the languages that are not as widely spoken. Yeah. I didn't even think about the ramifications there. That totally makes sense though. Yeah. So maybe increased focus on, you know, regions where they weren't typically seeing as much or at least as effective of emails because of that kind of advantage they had is now disappearing. Gene, any thoughts?
I think we're going to see a couple of things, especially in the world with SIEM. Number one, SIEM absolutely has to evolve. We're seeing attacks where the adversary is gaining their foothold and in less than 7 minutes, gaining full access to environments. And the way that the SIEM was originally developed, it just can't keep up. And so it has to start embracing all these other tools in the SOC for very fast response, very, ability to be able to say, hey, not only do I see this one particular TTP taking place, but the ability to combine it with an entire series of events. So we'll see more evolution with the SIEM. A lot of people love to say that it's going to go away. I don't think we're going to see it go away. But I do think the number one use of AI is going to be how to be an augmentation to those tier one, tier two analysts that we have in place. Most tier three analysts already have great experience. They know what's going on. They're looking for things. they don't want to get in an argument with a chatbot over what to go do next. But I think AI coaching, I think AI is going to have the capability of observing what our more experienced analysts are doing and being able to take that and help tier one and tier two more efficiently. It's going to be a great augmentation tool.
Interesting.
That's not wild, but...
Yeah. I mean, it's a good thought. I hadn't thought about the AI coaching of how to use the tool, but I mean, I guess that kind of makes sense, right? That it's like, hey, I noticed you could optimize your query, like, you know, stuff like that, right? I did see actually a question in the list here that I think would be kind of in your wheelhouse as well. Thoughts on why UEBA doesn't get brought up too much these days? Had the concept been canceled or replaced? What kind of happened there? Because that was paired with SIM for a while and then we didn't hear as much about it.
I think a lot of the functionality from UEBA has shifted more to the edge. And the challenge is UEBA was great when we centralized absolutely everything back in the day. And we could do our basic machine learning. It was a lot of statistics analysis, and that's what made UEBA successful. But with COVID and our workforce going more distributed instead of centralized, we now have to be able to make those predictive analyses closer to the edge in a more real-time scenario. So I think UEBA has just been, you know, kind of replaced with things like EDR, MDR, XDR to a degree. We're making the same types of judgments. We're just doing it closer to the edge.
Yeah, and I think something that happens a lot in the industry as well is that we confuse a product or a tool with a capability, right? And I don't know what Gene or Mark thinks about this, but I think that UEBA is a capability, right? That could be, you know, part of EDR, could be part of a bunch of other things. If you bring everything into a SIM, which it can also be a bad idea, you know, you can have it there as well. But I think we're going to see a lot more consolidation over the next year. This has already started, right? CISOs realizing that we have too many tools, and sometimes you need specific tools for specific things. But in many cases, we see that these capabilities, they get rolled into other products that we end up using. For example, you know, we talked about PKIs before, or even sandboxing. Remember the days when we used to have like sandboxes to detonate malware? And of course, we still do that from a malware research, threat intelligence, maybe perspective. But today, a sandbox is a key capability that is behind a lot of the gateways that we use, a lot of the, you know, fancy XDR stuff or EDR stuff. There's sandboxes behind all of this.
Yeah.
So it's a capability.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I think about that question, my mind goes immediately to a lot of the identity providers. Like, you know, if you have Azure AD, and we all do pretty much, right? Like Azure Identity Protection is kind of what UEBA was doing in a lot of the past. If you're doing any kind of single sign-on platform for your employees, right, there's going to be some kind of capability there watching, looking for anomalies, which I think is, you know, significantly overlapping what the traditional kind of UEBA products we're doing. And so a lot of what Gene said, I think I would agree with as well. And Ismail, of course, as well. The thing I was going to bring up is an interesting headline from about maybe 2 weeks ago now, mobile security. There was the attack, a specific one vulnerability, actually, that leveraged a flaw or intentional thing that popped up in iPhones that was kind of built into the processor. And, you know, mobile is kind of the Wild West for a lot of us, right? Like as security teams, we often don't see a lot on mobile devices. You know, we got an MDM, we got a little bit of control, but it's like if someone has, you know, rooted the phone with some top tier, you know, government quality vulnerability, it's really hard to see. And this vulnerability that just came out associated with the triangulation piece of malware, if you want to Google this, basically there was a secret register somewhere in the processor of an iPhone, right, where it was mapped to the memory and someone was able to find out about this. And it wasn't just usable if you found out about it. You actually had to submit code into this register that was signed specific kind of with like a hash. And so it was something that was like, you could never have stumbled into this unless you were someone that knew about it and knew how to access it, right? Because you kind of had to have the secret knock to even get in there. And so that makes me wonder, like, are we going to find more of this now that someone has, you know, no one's ever seen this before, right? And so now that we know that these kind of things are out there, they're probably in other devices as well. Now, can we find them? I don't know if we're going to be able to find them, but I'm sure that there's going to be increased scrutiny on this. So my wild prediction is going to be increased and potentially finding of existing hardware-enabled backdoors or other sneaky things that we might not know about in some of our smart devices as people see more and more ways that this kind of stuff can happen and that it is happening in certain scenarios. So some interesting reading there, and we'll see where mobile security takes us over the next few years. You know, that's something that's getting more and more accessible as it becomes more important, but it's still a really tough kind of nut for security teams to crack. So we'll see where that goes. Any closing thoughts from anyone here? I think we're about up on time on the panel.
I was just going to say about that operation triangulation, that one of the best ways of finding this, because you cannot prevent all bad things from happening, right? And but you could use some endpoint management to make sure that at least the data, you know, that is important to the organization that might be on the phone, right, that might be like vaulted in some sort of a vault that might be more isolated from other processes, but also network monitoring. Like the way that you would find operation triangulation would be through DNS monitoring. So of course, that's not always possible if people is outside of, you know, an office everywhere, but, you know, think about visibility. You can do that at home, right, with a Security Onion. I think Mark Baggett talks a lot about that in his
more to come
webinars as well, right? And we know a little bit about that too.
Just wait, everyone.
And monitoring DNS, monitoring network traffic, especially on systems that don't have an endpoint agent, right? Or cannot have an endpoint agent in some cases.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for all of that kind of interesting discussion. Always interesting to hear where you all are thinking the industry is going to go. And of course, probably in a year from now, we'll be back talking about were we right, were we wrong, and what's going to happen in 2025.
Thank you for listening to the Wait Just an InfoSec podcast. Remember to join us live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern for a new episode of Wait Just an InfoSec. You can watch at sans.org/WJAI or go to the SANS LinkedIn or YouTube channels. The Wait Just an InfoSec podcast will be released every Wednesday at noon. Thanks for listening. See you next week.